The notification process needed to be updated for new leases, and also agreed it would be a good thing to have some type of postcard, a special notification for the adjacent landowners. Now, I guess we're going to find out if you come up to any other agreements. That's kind of what we're here to do. We had started to talk about cages, and still in the notification process type of thing, if there would be some way of developing a notification process, either through a use permit, land use type of thing, or through permitting kind of thing. The reason I'm looking at you, John, is because the other John tells me you had a PowerPoint presentation.
Okay.
And I mean, is that something you think you should start with? I mean, is that something that you want to start with now, or is there
I don't have something focused towards the topic today. I just have pictures kind of similar to what we saw on the boat. So let me think about that for a minute. I don't think I have something particular for this right this second.
I guess the thing is, we have our kind of list that we developed as we were kind of talking, and we were kind of just getting to the cages, the notification, and then we also have that list that should be printed out in front of you. I printed it out. There he is.
Aubrey Lane was directing traffic.
That Ben kind of just went through all the different things, which aren't in the same exact order, but they kind of have all the issues. And then I still have Karen's list of questions that she sent out at the very first thing. So I don't have a particular order we have to talk about things in. The cages are the big gorilla. That's the thing that seems to get most people the most worried or the most anxious. And so we're going to have to discuss that sometime. I don't know if we just want to continue the discussion we were on last meeting, or do you have other issues you want to bring up first? Any opinions from anybody?
You want to go down this list, stay in order.
That would be his list.
Whose list?
Mrs. Ben's, which he made off of our discussions. They're not exactly in the same thing I wrote down, but they cover everything, I think. So you all have this list in front of you.
Mm-hmm. I'll talk about that number two.
No, that's I think we've already number one.
I'd like to talk about number one.
All right, go back to number one then.
I was disappointed to see the article, and we'd hung our hat. That's the only thing we've agreed on so far. The notification process, it can always get better no matter what we do, but that's not the issue. The notification process. First of all, who are we going to notify in the Lynn Haven when it's 100% leased? And who are we going to notify in Lincoln and Broad Bay if that's 60 or 65% leased? The horses are out of the barn. They've gone over the hill. We can't even see them anymore. I mean, it's almost too late. And to say that we're going to feel good that we got a better notification process is kind of hollow to me. And I don't mean any disrespect to the Marine Resource Commission. I've dealt with them for 20 years, and they do the best they can do. But to the people that are homeowners or recreational boaters, the law doesn't say that the VMRC has to do anything for homeowners. It doesn't say it has to do anything for recreational boaters. It deals with the commercial seafood industry. Now, if you notify them and go all this trouble to notify the last few people and the last few leases, and they come over here, there's going to be a homeowner who's going to drive over here in rush hour traffic. They don't know where the building is. They don't know where to park. They don't know how it works. And all the watermen have been here. They know how to get here. They know the system. They know the whole thing. So it's friendly to them and foreign to the homeowners that we're going to work so hard to notify. And once they get over here, you got great commissioners. Chad Ballard's one of the foremost authorities on aquaculture on the East Coast. You know, they've had crabbers on here. They've had you're a recreational fishing specialist, and they've had seafood packers on here, and they've had all kinds of commercial. They've had guys from the Port Authority, from the port. They've got Don Liverman from a terminal over there. These are all, and they all have done the best they can possibly do with all the different things they're supposed to do. But they're all appointed for their commercial point of view. And you're going to send, we're going to hang our hat on the fact that we have notified homeowners extra so they can come over here in a foreign place, in a foreign process, and they're going to plead their case in front of a commission that's been told by the General Assembly to take care of the watermen, take care of the leases, and you all take care of the striped bass and the crabs. When I talked about all the different commissioners, I didn't mention one to represent the homeowners. Not in the 20 years I've been over here, coming over here. There's not one to represent the boaters. This is a historical opportunity for the city of Virginia Beach that hadn't happened in the last 20 years, and there's no guarantee it's going to happen in the next 20 years. Commissioner Bull set this up, and you have a chance to try to work with these watermen and come to some kind of consensus that's good for them and good for the homeowners and good for the voters. And not everybody's going to be happy with everything. But if we are going to sit here and try to be nice and sweet, you know, I've known Chris Ludford for a long time. We've argued before. We've shook hands before. But I'm here hoping that we can do something, get everybody together. And if he's mad at me afterwards, I think I'll live with that. And if I'm mad with him, I don't think he's going to have a problem with that either. He's going to do what he thinks is best, too. But we have a historic opportunity. And Commissioner Bull, you're to be congratulated for setting this up. But if we don't seize the opportunity now, it might never come again in our lifetime. It hadn't come in the last 20 years. First time recreational homeowners and commercial watermen, and recreational boaters have been represented. This is a chance. This is it. It's not a popularity contest.
Okay. But you're not objecting to us notifying the homeowners?
No.
Okay.
I just don't think that's an end unto itself.
Absolutely not. That's a very, very, very little beginning. Yes, Millie?
See, I agree with Richard with his points. I think they're all valid, and I just am in agreement with what he has to say. I believe, particularly in the Lynn Haven area, you really need to have somebody representing the boaters, the recreational water users, and a homeowner. I think that would make a lot of sense, and I think that would be to the benefit of everyone.
But as a point of information, then this is the Lynn Haven River Shellfish Work Group, and the Lynn Haven bottom is 98% leased at this point.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Just so we're okay.
Yeah, correct.
So we're talking about 2%.
No, we're talking about all of it. Yeah. We're talking about all of it. Now, the Richard's point was, for new leases is all we've talked about. And so we were starting to talk about the rest of it.
Okay.
It is what we just started to look at the last meeting. So you're correct. We haven't done a lot. That was kind of the point. And the point now is to talk about more things. It's just a matter of, if I keep looking this way, someone's got to yell at me to make me look that way. What is this?
You don't notice it because you're sitting next to
me. Get him.
You need a
meetings. I'm like a ping pong match.
You need
for somebody that's raising their hand on either side. Yeah.
So anyway, Rick, I don't disagree with you, but that's the whole point. What we did last time was probably the easiest and least controversial thing of the whole thing. Now you got to start talking about the rest of it. And so.
I'll raise my hand.
I know that's where you were getting ready to go to number two on Ben's list.
Number two on Ben's list.
All right. Is it going through Ben's list?
We're good.
We're good. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm sorry for leaning in.
I had an exchange with Ben over the note about these signs that are on the leases. And Hap has these signs down there that it says aquaculture structures. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't know what in the world that means. And I think John Q. Public or a person who is a boat operator or somebody who's coming into town, they're not going to have any idea what an aquaculture structure, LOC, is. And it sounds to me like we're trying to hide something here. You're trying to be deceptive. I mean, why can't we call a spade a spade and just say underwater structures?
I like that. That's what we're planning on changing our signs to.
Because the whole point here is to keep public safety in mind so people don't run over and hit them or fall off their wakeboard onto them or get involved with them. You want to keep people away. If you put underwater structures there, I'd get away from them. Now, you know, the other thing is, I think if they were all marked like a crab trap, and you know, Hap's got 200 floating little buoys out there, people are going to say, I ain't going over there. That's a dangerous spot to be in. And it keeps people away from it. You put aquaculture structures, and it's like you're trying to be deceptive. You're trying to hide. That's my personal opinion. But Ben said it's already been, you know, voted on and decided, and it's over with. And Ben keeps telling me that he has some language that you're supposed to use that was approved by whoever approved it. But, you know, and there's some other reasons. I mean, some of these signs are some of the people who have these cages are always nervous that they're going to get poached. Well, that's the nature of the beast, I guess, in the oyster business is poaching. But it just seems to me if you're trying to warn the public on a public safety issue, you need to spell it out in no uncertain terms. I guarantee you, you won't find 2 or 3% of the population who understands what an aquaculture structure is. But 99.9% will know exactly what an underwater structure is, and that means stay away. So that's my opinion on it. I'd like to hear anybody else wants to say something about the way it's marked.
I like it.
I don't think anyone would have an objection to changing the wording to make it more generic. I don't think anybody would object to that.
A layman's language, that's all I'm after, folks. Mm-hmm. We don't need legal terms here. We just need to make it simple. And so, you know, a 10-year-old, excuse me, a 16-year-old on a jet ski. I said the wrong thing. There's a lot of kids out there on jet skis. You know what I mean?
Are they dangerous?
Ben?
Do you use the word dangerous?
Do I use the word dangerous
should you use the word dangerous? If you say it's underwater structure, what's
well,
that mean?
Anytime there's an underwater structure, a boater understands that it could be a stump, it could be a rock, it could be a sandbar, it could be anything. Anybody who operates a boat is going to know you stay away from an underwater structure. I mean, there's sunk boats out there in the Lynn Haven. There's all kinds of things that are on the bottom. But the problem we've got here is these cages are being put underwater, so, you know, they're not visible. If they were visible, we wouldn't be having this discussion about the public safety. People wouldn't hit them. But if you put up a sign that says aquaculture structures, people are going to, you know, and that gentleman takes exceptions that I don't say the right words. But I don't know what an aquaculture structure is. I didn't know it until a month ago.
I would agree with you.
I think the big thing is warning. I think that's sort of a
yeah, like that first sign? That first sign is exactly
right,
where I'm at.
Let's keep it up on the committee for now.
That first sign is exactly what I'm at.
That's what I was saying about danger.
Make it clear.
Richard, you had
all approved by me already language that can be used. The regulation has the words aquaculture structures. That is the word that's in the regulation. The regulation also authorizes me as the chief engineer to approve another type of language. These are a sign operator who queried me about what he could do to offer these for sale, and he sent me these, and I said all three of these are acceptable. I think these are being used all over the state, these different ones here you see. They are all acceptable. We did do the regulation back in October. There was some discussion about what to say and what not to say. We settled on aquaculture structures, but we're not wed to that. The regulation can be amended. But just for your information.
Well, see, half signs don't say that. They don't say danger.
They don't say. I agree.
It says aquaculture structure, LOC. And I don't have any idea what LOC means.
He's supposed to have the name of his company also on the sign. So LOC is Lynn Haven.
Okay.
That's what the LOC is. Let's have your initials.
One extra question. I do like that sign, and we'll buy them. But are we allowed, if we know of other underwater structures which are dangerous, can we put those signs down to kind of show the boating public, or does it have to be the Marine Patrol or what?
Not the right person to answer that question. You have a law enforcement person.
He's hiding.
That pillar is just the right size.
Don't they encourage people to put their own signs out?
We're not going to argue with him.
But it was someone who had construction in the water could put, the, put, the, put their own sign out. It's a danger.
If the watermen are out, if the watermen are out and they know of a structure that, you know, at low tide could be dangerous, could they put one of the a sign out to notify the public, or do we have to get in touch with you all and let you all do it?
In my opinion, it would be better if we did it.
Okay.
Because not everybody knows the water, and next thing you know, you've got, you know, mm-hmm. signs where they shouldn't be or become an even bigger danger.
Any other comments from the committee? Richard?
I'd like to ask you a question. A couple questions. How many cages do you think are in Lynn Haven now? Just guess, yeah. Just within 20.
We know it's less than 10 acres.
Let's just say 100 or 200. Let's say 100.
Yeah.
How many do you think were there 2 years ago? None?
Oh, no.
Well, Cap's had his lease for longer than that.
Okay.
He's one of the main ones.
All right.
I have over 1,000.
Over 1,000. When we talk about marking them, explain what marking is. How many of those signs? And how many cages you have to have that many signs, and how few cages you have to have that many signs. And if this is 100 acres and we got cages here, cages way over in that corner, cage, do we have to have all three areas marked? I mean, what does marking mean?
So I gave you a copy of the regulation a couple meetings ago, but I'll try to summarize it as quick as I can. The aquaculture regulation that allows the lease, the cages on a lease, in conjunction with the marking regulation for marking oyster ground, specific to your question, is if you have a cage, commercial cage on your lease, you're supposed to mark, put at least two signs up. The minimum is yeah. two. You can put more than that. There is no maximum, but a minimum of two. And we debated that about what should be in the regulation. Should it be two, four, eight? We opted with a minimal because we're balancing the number of signs and the visual impact with warning the public that there's something there. So two seems like a very minimum. It is the very minimum. So you have to have two. Two per lease or two per active work area. You can mark either one. You can mark your lease if you have cages on it with at least two signs, which means somewhere on that lease there are cages. Or if you're just using a very small area of your lease and you just want to mark just the area where the cages are, you should mark that perimeter with some markers. And at least two of them need to have signs on them, at least two.
Okay.
Is it, if it's a 100-acre lease and you have six cages on it, could you put one sign at one end of the lease and one at the other? Technically, the way the regulation is written, I guess, yes. That's not the spirit. The spirit is to put the signs where the structures are.
Answers my question.
Okay.
And the reason
I'm going to jump back and forth if you ask me questions, because we are recording this. Just for everybody's disclosure.
Well, the reason I ask that is you got to think long term down the road, and not just what's happening this year. We got to be careful what we wish for because we might get it. What if hopefully we will have a proliferation. Hopefully these orchard guys will make a bunch of money and they'll put more cages out and they'll mark them. But how many signs do we want out there? If only a certain, was it 1% or 2% is used now, what happens if we get 50, 60% used? How many white PVC posts are we sticking up with signs? If they spread them over a large area, naturally I would think they would put signs in, not to protect the public, but to protect people from running over their oyster cages. So I don't have anything to say against this except for at this point, think about what it's going to be like 4 years from now when we got 4,000 cages. And what's it going to be like 10 years from now when we got 6,000 or 7,000 cages? What's it going to look like out there? A jungle of signs? I think something we ought to consider, not necessarily today, is marking them with the buoys. And like John said, you go to some place and there's 20 buoys there, if there's one on each cage, like a crab pot buoy, number one, you can write the person's waterman's number on there, so it's identifying whose cage it is, and everything's taken care of, and they're marked, without having PVC pipes sticking up everywhere. If we only had to put 40 or 50 or 100 of them out there, that's one thing. But I think you're looking at hundreds, if not thousands, down the road, and nobody wants that out there.
You know, other states have a limit on how much aquaculture they have in a water zone. So that's one opportunity. Another thing is we're trying to force fit a process for the whole state into a city. And I don't think that makes sense. It's trying to treat how we would, you know, every place just the same. In a city is different. In a city, it's full of complex. And you have, I mean, that's why you have a whole city organization to work that. You have conflicts all the time between commercial and residential, and you have boards that work that. You have zoning that helps you with that. To think that you're going to do this kind of thing in a city and not have conflict is just naive. You're going to have conflict, it's a natural thing, and it should be all up and exposed so it bubbles out and you get the right solution and everybody's in agreement for it. And kind of what the problem is now is that hasn't happened, and people feel disowned by the process that currently we do have. And so I have a question to this panel. Is there a thought of treating subdivisions in places where you have this high population density different than when you're out in the other areas where, the policies here are pro-business and making things happen for the state of Virginia, and there are areas where they're very, very appropriate. Now, when you get into a city, I just don't feel that way anymore.
No other immediate comments? All right. Let me just ask you about those signs. HAP's sign doesn't have the word danger on it. When you throw that word danger on there, you think that is adequate for signage?
I put my signs out before these came available.
Yeah.
And
I think the danger is true and present. And the problem I'm having with is that the cages are hidden. A lot of the times they're just an inch or two under the water. So you put the word danger there, and you put the word underwater structures. Anybody will know what they're looking at. And so I would think that those are absolutely adequate. My comment was absolutely from my own head. I don't know what an aquaculture structure is. I think that's beating around the bush. And that first sign over there, underwater structures, is right on. And we keep every little kid and every boat operator away from it. I think the aquaculture is the word that kind of got me all confused. So, did I answer your question?
Kind of. I guess the thing I've got is if I see that word danger, I don't care what the other words are. As long as I see danger, that makes me slow down.
And a lot of times you got to realize it might be somebody in a boat going 30 miles an hour or 40 miles an hour, you know, and they'll read danger a lot faster than they'll read underwater structure, but they'll stay away from danger.
And they'll read red, too.
And
the other signs don't have red in them. They're just, I don't think there's a color requirement, is there?
The reason we used aquaculture is because the regulation contemplates cages, trays, bags, nets. So we didn't try to define every one of those things in the regulation. We tried to use a word that covers all those activities, because on the Eastern Shore they put nets over clam ground. Are they a structure? Well, that's kind of not exactly, but the clammers certainly don't want people going over and tearing them up with their props, and you don't want to get those caught in your prop. So that was kind of a generic word we used to understand that DMRC does know what aquaculture is versus the public. But that was really kind of the reason we picked that word, to try to cover, you know, all of them. I think underwater or submerged still is fine. It still covers all those things. It's just caution. If you go in there, beware. Something bad might happen. So the regulation could be amended to either take that language out completely or say that all of them have to say danger something. I don't know how we'd word it, but the regulation should. It is optional there. You can use these signs. These are allowed.
Yes, Millie?
I was going to say, and the panel will have to think about this. I have a little problem in the balance. Looking at safety on one side, you have to mark it, have to have signs, all that good stuff. At the same time, if someone has a large section, and I'm not looking at what we have now, but what we might have 3, 4, 5 years from now, where someone has, I don't know, 100, 150 acre section, and is two signs enough if there's a lot of oyster cages there? You know, you got one here, one there. Well, I have visions of people not necessarily knowing, is that just for this little area? Because we're so accustomed to the crab pots, you know, a marking per pot. So here we have this balance. Do we really want to have every cage have its own little, you know, on surface water marking? Do we want to have poles? And how do you, where's the safety factor, you know, where you have versus the fact that it, you know, looks terrible. Nobody wants to look at 4-foot poles sticking out of the water all over the place. But where is that fine line of where we have safety for the public, you know, versus marking it and versus, you know, being safe or not safe?
On our lines, I agree, all of us would want to have as many signs as required without cluttering up cluttering up to protect our equipment. That's expensive stuff. But on our long lines, we have both the signs that are required, which we have to add more, and we also have buoys going down the line. So people see the buoys.
And
the flags. I mean, one of the things we want to do is protect our equipment from a boat coming in and damaging our equipment. We don't want the boat damaged either. But we're not going to fight anything like that because it's not in our best interest.
Hey, John? Yeah.
Well, what if we had a regulation that said something along, like, for every 50 cages, you got to have a sign, or for every 100 cages, you got to have a sign? You know, and that would kind of answer what Millie was talking about. If we had some sort of a minimum that was based on that, rather than, you know, the thing you've got now is so spread out that it can be so spread out. Because sometimes these cages are clustered, and sometimes they're in a long straight line. And it might be better to say, you know, every 25 or every 50 or some number we all agree to.
Wouldn't it be more logical to do it by distance, to say every 50 feet or every 100 feet you have to have a sign, not by number of cages? Because the number of cages isn't consistent in an area.
To answer your question, yes. I mean, regulation. We could write a regulation that reflects whatever, you know, whether it's a distance, how many cages. You know, we can write a regulation. And by the way, welcome to my world. This is what I deal with every day, is the balance between safety,
right,
aesthetics,
right. Littering,
too many signs, not enough signs, too many stakes, not enough stakes. We're always open to trying to do this better than we're doing it. And
I'd hate to have a statewide rule, because what I would do in the area that I operate in is different than over on the eastern shore. I have a lot of people, a lot of boats and residents and everything, and I want them to know where my stuff is so that they can avoid it, or if they're on paddle boards or kayaks and they want to come and look at the wildlife around it, that's fine too, you know. But I wouldn't want something to be imposed that works for me on people that are up on the eastern shore or, you know, whatever.
This is back to the careful what you ask for, you might get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, on the eastern shore,
I'm hoping we can
get a lot of clam people would
here.
Be happy if we said more stakes. It's good, because they would like to put more stakes around their clam ground and make sure people don't go across them. Mm-hmm. And we say, no, you can only put them with, you know, they have to be some space between them.
I think we're all starting to recognize quite clearly, including this, that what what we mentioned earlier, is that what goes on here in the Lynn Haven, because it's a city, as John said, and because of the population and the residential, that some things that apply here will not apply to other areas and vice versa. So we almost do have to think of it as two different areas and try to come up with something that works, but it probably will not all be the same all the way across the board.
Bill?
As a boat owner and operator, the thing that I would like to see, I'm not so concerned about the sign, but if every pot had a buoy, when you run up to Lynn Haven and you're going 20 or 22 knots, one of the things you're looking for is crab pots, buoys. You don't want to get tangled up in any of those, so it's very visible. And if each pot had a floating designation, whether it was in a line or a group, it would be very easy to avoid, because we avoid the crab pots now. But if you have a sign that says you're in an aquaculture structure area, I'm not sure that registered very much when you're chugging on or you're, you know, pulling water skis or whatever you're doing.
Operating at night.
Hmm?
Operating at night.
Cap, does that seem...
Well, operating at night, that's another thing.
Does that seem feasible to you, that there would... to put a buoy on each cage?
Not on each cage. We already have a buoy like every 10 cages
buoys,
or something,
right.
So we can find the darn things.
Right.
But, yeah, we have them all along. It's just a, I didn't know it was a safety feature, but it's just how we find our cages.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see where it would help other people. I don't think every cage, that would be real clutter out mm-hmm. there, I think. And it wouldn't give people that are kayaking or paddle boarding enough room to get around and to visit and stuff like that.
Okay.
How many cages do you have on that buoy? Or do you have them tied in a line?
I have a line that has like 150 cages on it.
Okay.
And then we have buoys, maybe 20 or 30 buoys.
So is there a requirement you had to have one buoy every 10 or 20 cages, 25 cages, you could work with that?
We're probably doing that now, yeah.
Anybody
I was
want?
Peering over the
glass. Yeah. It's hard. This is a weird setup.
Yeah, I know.
Talk to other people.
Mike, do you know of any? Does that sound reasonable, or does that?
I think that.
Everybody.
Yeah, I think you're going to get some pushback from industry if they have to buoy every cage. HAP has 1,000 cages. That's 1,000 buoys, 1,000 lengths of line. And it gets expensive. It also becomes difficult to work if you're having to deal with those lines and buoys on every cage. Yeah.
And on the lines, again, Lynn Haven specific, mm-hmm. I want people to know where my cages are, so, you know, if they've got a boat, mm-hmm. they can avoid it. But so I have buoys and lines. They don't need it up, you know, northern areas of Chesapeake Bay. It would be a real hardship on them.
Mm-hmm.
It would be.
I got a question.
But what is the typical size of a cage farm? I mean, you have one that's like in Broad Bay. It's a little over 5 acres. And that is, I think, a large aqua farm, at least... you know, if you look at what Maryland, I think, allows, it goes up to 5 acres, right? And you don't know? Okay.
Maryland,
well, based on what I read, it said it was 5.
Don't worry about
you. Don't worry about Maryland. That's out of your distance. But that seems like that's a pretty good size. And at least when I looked at the different states, that seemed like that was one of the larger sizes that you could possibly do. You guys looked at this at all? I mean,
did you say 5 acres?
5 acres, yeah.
No, 500 acres is what we have.
No. What you're actually doing with aquaculture with cages.
I would think of, I'm not very good at numbers, measurements, but I think it's bigger than 5 acres.
Okay, so there are.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a small one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
Yes, this John.
Oh.
Too many Johns.
Well, we are c- coming quickly to the assumption that the conclusion that the rules are going to be different in the city limits and outside the city limits. And what do you want us to be talking about? If this is a Lynn Haven group, we should be talking about what's going on in the city limits.
Correct.
Which is things like zonings and setbacks and public safety and all the things that we're talking about. But I think it's two separate issues here.
I'm glad you asked that. My perspective is this. We're here because the commission decided to put a hold on all the leasing in the Lynn Haven River system. As this panel is formed, we discuss the issues and we try to find a path forward that resolves these user conflicts. To that end, the commission's charge was pretty specific. And the only moratorium on issuing new leases or at this point is just in the Lynn Haven River system. So to that end, I would say it's our charge to focus on these issues. That said, some of the things that are going to be come up with that are going to be beneficial to better managing these water bottoms and these issues will have some statewide implications and would have some statewide impact. A good example is the notification. I think we've all realized and we've all talked and we've come to the understanding that one of the big problems is people don't know that there are leases out there on the state's water bottoms. They don't know what these watermen are doing out there when they suddenly magically appear. They don't know where these cages come from that pop up here, you know, yesterday morning. So to that end, I think we've all kind of agreed that better notification so that the upland property owner knows what's coming or has a chance to have a say is beneficial in the Lynn Haven River and statewide. So I use that as an example. So when I say I think that our best efforts are focused on the Lynn Haven River system, but an acknowledgement that some of these changes would have beneficial statewide impact if they're adopted and brought forward. Some of these things would require some code changes, and that'll take the General Assembly, the notification provision being the key one. I can tell you I personally think that it is entirely reasonable and incumbent upon us to have a system where the upland property owner is notified when there's a lease in front of their house that's been applied for. I think that's just simple fairness. And I'm a big believer in open, transparent government. I think that the other notification provisions, I think, should very reasonably apply to the neighboring leaseholders. I think that they should have a right to know who's moving into the neighborhood. I think that's a fair thing, and I'm open and transparent government. The other thing that I think needs to be changed for the notification is that we no longer have to, at the agency, take the Marine Police off the water and off of their law enforcement duties to drive these pieces of paper to the courthouse and put them up there where nobody will ever see them. So that would have a statewide benefit. So when you ask what I think, my thinking is we should focus on the Lynn Haven River system and the impacts that we're seeing now and the potential impacts for down the road, but also keep in mind that some of these provisions may be applicable statewide. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay. That was easy.
Now, are you saying because the Lynn Haven is in a city limits, there are other city limits in the state that are having issues with the same thing?
I would say that the commission board made a very conscious decision to confine this group's mission to the Lynn Haven River system. I think that I agree with John that there's something special about Virginia Beach, the largest city in Virginia, and one of the most heavily used water bodies in the state with multi-purpose use that kind of makes this a little bit different than most other places. So to that end, I can see confining this to the Lynn Haven River, most of the things that we talk about and we decide on and we recommend, but keep in mind that maybe someday they may be applicable in other cities that end up with high-density populations and multi-uses.
Oh.
And it also has the added benefit of perhaps keeping some industry members
from being very scared about a camel's nose going under the tent and causing all sorts of problems needlessly when they're out in the middle of nowhere doing what they do that bothers no one.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that would maybe speak to what you're saying is that historically there was oyster growing in the Lafayette River in Norfolk, in the Hampton River in Hampton, in other urban areas, but none of those rivers meet the health department standards at this point. The Lynn Haven's the only one that meets the health department standards, and it has only met those standards for a few years.
I want to say, some of you have heard me say this, but you all fall into the category of no good deed goes unpunished. Because a lot of work that was done to clean up the Lynn Haven River system had the great results of actually having clean enough water to harvest oysters out of it, which meant more oyster leases, which meant more oyster cages, which meant conflict, and that brings us all here today. So if the Lynn Haven River hadn't been cleaned up, none of us would be here tonight.
If we dirty it up, does that take care of the problem?
I would argue that that's not the solution we should be looking for.
One quick question.
Yes,
sir.
If we come to an agreement here, can it be handled regulatorily without having to go
that's,
to the legislative?
No, that's a real good question, Hap. All right, and let me explain this. There's a difference between state law statute, which is kind of, here's the best way of looking at it from my perspective. It's kind of like the operating instructions for your automobile, but it doesn't tell the mechanic how to change the light bulb. The regulations are the ones that enact the general concepts and the requirements of the code. The sad part with this is that the Code of Virginia is very, very specific about how we handle oysters. It's a throwback to 100 years ago where government and society wasn't as complicated as it is today, and the General Assembly could handle a specific management plan for this critter, for oysters. Now, we've all learned, I think we've learned, that some of these code provisions, the General Assembly is good about passing laws. They're not very good about repealing laws. So we got a bunch of laws, like the notification provision, that, they're like an appendix. They've been there for 50, 60, 80, 100 years, and nobody's given a second thought to them because nobody's had to, and so they stay on the books. So there's going to be some things that are going to be recommended to be changed that require a change in the code, and that will require General Assembly approval to do that. There are some things where the code gives the agency authorization to handle the management thereof, and that would be through regulation, and those are things that could be changed by the commission board. Does that help?
Sort of. I'm scared of that camel's nose. The things that we're basically talking about, I think, are like setbacks. I think Millie mentioned water.
Setbacks can be handled through regulation. Marking can be handled through regulation.
Notification would be state
notification. Law. The state code is specific about who we notify and how we do it.
Okay. I'm satisfied. Thank you.
And I defy anybody to tell me that they got their news about an oyster lease from the courthouse. It hasn't happened in 30 years, I'm sure.
John? Yeah. Could I just voice a concern? I'm in total agreement with what you just said, but I would like to caution this work group and really think through what we agree upon, as this, maybe with the exception of Mike O, there is no representation from the western part of the state, the Middle Peninsula, the Northern Neck, and I'm Eastern Shore. I would caution this work group as we move forward to look at how we set policy for the entire state with no representation from the rest of the state.
It's a really good point. Let me expound on that on one point here. And the key word here is policy. General Assembly sets the policy. The policy is that leases, the water bottoms can be and should be leased for the purposes of propagating oyster. That's policy. We ain't changing that. General Assembly could, but we can make a recommendation to do that, but it doesn't have anything to do directly with the Lynn Haven River system, and I'm not sure that we would carry a lot of clout with how we're going to go into this and, in effect, rewrite how the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, handles oysters and manages water bottoms. I think there are specific things that we can recommend that can be changed through regulation and a few code changes that would better the system, but we're not going to be able to rewrite the entire system. So to that end, I would say that there's a few things that are really just kind of not within our purview. I mean, they're really just not. I mean, what the state charges for rent for the lease bottom is a great example. That's really not within our purview. It really doesn't have anything to do with the Lynn Haven River system specifically. It doesn't really have anything to do with the user conflicts anywhere. So I would argue that's a policy thing the General Assembly needs to worry about if they want to worry about it. There's a whole bunch of other things that we lease, that there are riparian leases, the extent of the riparian leases. We can probably make some recommendations, but that's a policy issue that the General Assembly will or may not handle. So I guess I'm asking to focus on the Lynn Haven River system, what can make this system better in the Lynn Haven River system, and those that can apply statewide that are at least easy, logical, non-controversial way of doing things, well, let's go forward with those as recommendations. Does that make sense? Johnny, you're looking at me like I'm speaking Greek.
I understand a little Greek.
Of course he does.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, do you all agree? Or do you think I have it wrong?
Well,
Richard, you look really confused about...
No, I don't understand why everybody's confused. When you put me on the board, you said to mitigate these problems in the city of Virginia Beach. You didn't say anything about the state. The lady's worried about there's no state representatives or industry representatives. We've got Mike here. At most of the VMRC meetings, there's nobody here to represent the if anything comes from the General Assembly, there'll be plenty of the Marine Products Board and all the watermen's groups. They'll all be up there. I don't know how many homeowners groups or boaters groups will be up there. But industry will be well represented with paid lobbyists. None of us are paid. So it's perfectly clear. We're supposed to try to come to agreement, and hopefully Chris and I are going to speak to each other afterwards, on what we can do for the Lynn Haven. And if for us the state wants to adopt some of it, fine. That's not our problem.
Richard, I completely agree with you, completely. I guess my caution would be to John that this work group is not making recommendations for the rest of the state. If you, as the commissioner of VMRC, would then like to take what we have recommended for the Lynn Haven forward, that is totally and completely your option.
But I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he's got better things, and his commissioners have better things to do than resolve property disputes ad infinitum into late at the night. So he's hoping that we come up with something to make those disputes shrink dramatically, and hopefully down the road the state will adopt some things, maybe this, maybe not, to make them shrink.
Your problems are my problems, whether it's in the middle of the night or not. And in all seriousness, there are a few things I think we've already agreed, and the notification is the prime example of that. To change how we notify and who we notify, that's going to require a change in the code.
Which will be statewide.
But then again, you think from a basic policy, we're asking for a policy change. We'll be recommending a policy change if that goes forward from this commission, from this work group. That would be applicable statewide, and I would argue that it should. I think that that's just a good government provision. I think that we've also discussed to some varying degree or another whether or not we should have a use plan as a requirement as part of the evaluation on whether or not a lease should be granted or renewed. And I think the use plan, if that's the case, with the agency having a clawback provision by not abiding by the use plan, would be a major change in policy. But I would argue that would solve 90% of the problems in the Lynn Haven River system, and therefore would solve a lot of other potential problems in other parts of the state. But if we had a lease out there that we knew was never going to be used for caged aquaculture, would people be as upset about the lease as they seem to be now? I kind of don't think so. So Does that help clarify at least my thinking on this? Or does anybody have an entirely different viewpoint or would like to discuss some nuances of whatever I've just said? Billy?
Since we're talking policy, and we haven't gotten into it, we haven't really just touched upon it a little bit here and there, at some point, I think we ought to visit riparian rights and those requirements as they are, you know.
I think that's
something we can do later, but I think it's necessary.
A direct user conflict issue within the Lynn Haven River system.
Mm-hmm.
That would require a change in the code. Mm-hmm. I think we should discuss that.
Yeah.
It's on our list.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, we know all the issues that are down there in the Lynn Haven River system. I don't seek to transplant these in whole on the rest of the state, mm-hmm. but there's some things that I think are just basic good government that I think would make the system easier statewide.
You want to talk about? Do you want us to talk about the permitting?
In what respect?
Well, we have a list of all these things that we think should happen, but I think that there needs to be some sort of genuine permitting process that the cages need to go through before they're put out there.
As I understand the code, and Ben's life has been these code sections and the execution of these now for a third of a century. So I will certainly bow and defer to his expertise. But I would say that we permit cages in specific criterion, not, you know, 12 inches or less doesn't require a permit, but it's floating in the water column, it requires a permit. I think the permit regulations fall within our jurisdiction in the Lynn Haven River and with this work group. Some may or may not be applicable statewide. And that, if that comes to this, that's going to be a very tricky, very dicey thing. So I would ask that when that comes before you all, be very careful because there are landmines all over it.
So that was that a no?
I think that the permitting system and the permitting system for cage aquaculture in the Lynn Haven River system is an entirely applicable thing to discuss.
Well, you brought the word up when you start talking about the site plans and the use plans.
Yep.
You know, because everybody else who does biz in the city has to go through all the hoops and hurdles of getting use plans and site plans and reviews and all this takes a couple of years to get a permit to build something. But underwater, all you got to do is get a lease and go.
And that is the cause of much of the angst in the Lynn Haven River system because folks do know that now that when a lease is granted, there's no barrier to putting caged aquaculture out there as long as it's 12 inches or less on their lease. That's clearly a conflict, and it's clearly a conflict in the Lynn Haven River system. So I think that's certainly something that you all should discuss, that you should try to find.
Should we discuss having a use plan or a site plan or requiring that and making a recommendation of that?
Yeah.
It's not on our agenda. It's
on our list. It is.
This is what?
Number 11.
Lease use plan.
It was like 1B on my list. That's what we started to talk about last time. So it's definitely... Because that's the gorilla. That's the big thing.
That is absolutely the gorilla. And from my perspective, it's three critical components that are at the heart, as I understand the conflict issues. Give me one second, Mike. Is that, one, people don't know that there's a lease out there that's applied for. Two, they don't know whether or not there's going to be oyster cages on there. Three is that they have no say in this, whether or not there's cages being allowed on that lease. So if with the use plan in particular, you put it all together here, you got a way to be able to confine the issues for the public. Is there a lease? Okay. They may be fine with that. If there's a lease with cages, they may not be fine with that. And if it's a permitting type of system, well, then that would be resolved through the commission. The commission's quite adept at handling these types of issues. Or at least we've gotten so in recent years. Yeah, Mike.
Two comments. First of all, the permitting of cages is a regulatory item, so it would not need to go to Richmond to be modified. Second of all, I have problems with existing cages being required to go back and get permitted because they have essentially come in under the law, and as far as I'm concerned, it was a contract between the watermen and the MRC. They were permitted legally and should not be required to go back and retrofit or retro-ask for permission to put the cages down.
Except that it wasn't a permit.
Well, it is permitted by the regulation.
Okay. See, what I say, there's landmines all over this.
I got another question. Sure. I got a conflict. Point for you is the... The MRC people keep telling me that you're governed by the public trust doctrine.
Correct.
And the water bottom belongs to all of the citizens of the state. But they're leased to one guy for 10 years. Now, in my mind, if you're leasing it to one guy, but it belongs to all of us, that seems like an oxymoron.
I hear exactly what you're saying.
How does public trust and giving it to one guy rationalize in your head?
That's the state's policy that's been in effect now for more than 100 years. And the policy was set up in the 1890s that the Commonwealth would lease its water bottoms that it holds in trust for everybody for the purposes of propagating oysters. Only for propagating oysters. It's not for mining fossil shell.
It says may be used. So there's another landmine because there's other leases you can do.
Now that's true. I was too broad there in my comment. I should have stuck to the narrowest interpretation at hand here. We're not going to change that policy. That would be a sea change in the Commonwealth's policy on how it manages its water bottoms. And it dedicates us to manage those water bottoms in public trust. So at the end of the day, the public trust doctrine, to me, with the issue of leasing water bottoms, boils down to this simple question. There's all sorts of nuances in this. Is this an appropriate, whatever is being applied for, is this an appropriate and valuable use of the state's water bottoms? I think that applies that if you're going to build a pier, that's the question. If you're going to build a pipeline across the bay, you're going to build a bridge. If you're going to lease the water bottoms. To that end, to me, it boils down to that simple yet very nuanced question. And there's no easy answer, and there's no simple answer depending on the case. That said, backing up to your original point, from my perspective, the Commonwealth wants to lease water bottoms. They want us to lease the water bottoms for them for the purposes of propagating oysters. That's not going to change. I don't think it should change. And I think that it can be better managed.
Well, I disagree with you.
Okay.
And the thing that drives me is the fact that we're in a city where we've got so many other users. And you're talking about a law that was passed historically 100 years ago. They didn't have... A million people living around the Chesapeake, around the Lynn Haven back then. Now we got a whole different thing where we got all the other users are having to, go around these things, dodge these things, look out for these things, look at these things. They got them commercial operations in their backyards where they didn't used to have them. I mean, all of this has really changed the dynamics because we're in a city here, a great big dynamic city. And so, If you're saying it's public trust, that's where my head goes to. How can it be? Because the public is all those boat operators and all those recreational users and all those homeowners. That's the public too.
You better be careful because those Sierra Club members up in Richmond and Roanoke and all of that don't care about boaters down here. They care about clean water and all kinds of stuff like that. So. you know, if you put a pit one group against another group, I don't think the homeowners would actually win that argument with the oysters cleaning the water and what have you. And if you go back to when they passed these laws, it was to take barren bottom land and encourage the watermen to replant to grow oysters for the economy of Virginia, to help the economy. So,
John, I don't mean to be flip here, and I understand exactly what you're saying, and I understand your heart. This work group is highly unlikely to be effective at changing the General Assembly's mind to no longer lease oyster water bottoms anywhere. Welcome to try that. I mean, I know them. That's a really tough lift. I think that we're better if we're focused on how to better manage the water bottoms that we do lease, as opposed to getting sidetracked on whether or not they should be leased at all, because the state's policy for a century has been to lease them for this purpose. And I would find it to be an insurmountable lift to be able to talk the General Assembly into anything else. That's just my advice.
It looks like, the thing that I've been kind of, I appreciate the code when you really read it in detail. It actually did a pretty decent job, even the stuff that was done 100 years ago. But, I mean, clearly in 1205, which is one of the areas you're supposed to look at for permits of use of state-owned bottom lands, it says, you know, number one is other reasonable and permissible uses of state waters and state-owned bottom lands, and number two is marine and fisheries, and number four is adjacent or nearby properties, which to me is the next-door neighbors. So I think you're covered already in the code. It's just, you got to read it and say, okay, can we do, you know, do we build regulations? Can we build regulations from that? So I think a lot of the stuff is there, you know, when you go back and look at the detail. I mean,
but there are experts in the room here that would say 28.2.1205 is really a different focus than the 600 series, 600 through 650, which,
okay,
or more, that actually involves directly.
It's 600s?
600s.
Yeah.
28.2.600 up to what?
Yeah, I guess I think you're right, because I was concentrating on 603, and I think 603 references
I'm
that.
I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, okay.
I have been around the legislative process now for about 25 years.
And I'm not a lawyer either.
Yeah. So it's always dangerous to look at one code section by itself without context with other code sections that are related or maybe even more applicable. So, John, we have whole code sections that say what we'll advertise, when we'll advertise it, how long we'll advertise it, how long the leases will be, how big the leases will be. I mean, all this stuff. Asking the General Assembly to pull all that out of the code or put some sort of caveat that none of this applies in a city in the Commonwealth of Virginia with a population more than 422,000, I mean, which would be the way to do it, because that would apply only to Virginia Beach. Well, I wish you luck if that's really what you want to do. But I got to tell you, that's Sisyphus. That's pushing the boulder up the hill. That's my opinion.
I don't think there would be widespread support for that, even in Virginia Beach.
Richard.
I just got to take up for John a little bit. I don't want to try to change the code. Lord knows I don't like coming here. I'm darn sure don't want to go to Richmond. So,
Richard, me neither.
Yeah. But I think that I have a basic problem with the public trust doctrine, and you're leasing or renting or giving control of property in the city of Virginia Beach, and it could put other people's enjoyment, the well-being of their property, and their health at jeopardy, and that's what we're here to deal with. But I basically have the same heartburn that you have, that's a conflict going on here, And I guess that's why we're here, is to mitigate it if we can.
It's all a balance. You know, it's all a balance. When a permit is issued for dredging, that has impacts on the whole ecosystem. When someone builds a pier from their property out into the water, they have to have a permit to do that because that impacts everyone. So it's trying to balance all these different uses and all the different needs. It's all about finding that balance.
So are you saying we need to have permits? Because, I mean, those are the permit processes that you have to go through to do all those things, and we're not doing those for...
Well, and then we have the leasing process for...
That is still...
For aquaculture, we have a leasing process.
No, you have a leasing leasing process for grounds.
Mm-hmm.
That's not for... I mean, that...
And then aquaculture is defined, and one of the questions that is on our list is whether there should be a use agreement with that. That signifies exactly what type of aquaculture you're going to do. But aquaculture is already defined broadly.
So, if I may, and I'm probably out of line here.
No, you go ahead. You stood up. You can stay.
I was asked to stand up.
Sorry there, aren't you?
Column back there. Karen, to that point here, there's leasing the water bottom and a use plan. The question at hand here is, okay, the state leases the water bottoms for this purpose. Does it therefore give up the right to say how that lease is used? I mean, I think that's part of the heart of the question.
Right. I agree with that.
Just one more.
That is a tough question.
I know.
It's a tough question.
You know, there's landmines all over the place. And you all are here because we have failed to successfully navigate all the landmines with how we manage and how we regulate this and how the General Assembly has or has not changed the codes.
Right.
So your help is invaluable. I'm not blowing smoke.
Yeah. I would like us to find a balance, and I agree with what you're saying, but it's kind of hard to talk about balance when Lynn Haven River watershed, you know, 2,400 acres are already leased. I mean, that's a done deal. You have to go back and revisit it if we were going to do that. And all we have left is that little bit of acreage here and there that has no leases. So what we're doing, in essence, too, is actually working two different things. Are we going to go, what are we going to do forward for the areas that are not leased yet? And we've already, the other areas are leased. So can we do anything about that or not? Or do we want to?
Okay.
We're talking about balance.
And somebody had mentioned looking long-term. I think that was you, Richard, here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see that most of the water bottom out there is leased, and most of it is. That's mm-hmm. true. Not all of it is used, mm-hmm. and that's true. And some of these leases have been around for a long time that haven't really been used, and that's true, too. On the other hand, leases do come up for renewal.
Mm-hmm.
Leases are given up. There could be a new lease applicant for some of these water bottoms in the future. So down the road, what you decide here and recommend here could have a play on much more than just what 2% is currently unleased. And then there's the 800-pound elephant in the room for all those leases that are out there that do not have aquaculture cages on it. What do you want to do about a process and a system that handles that in a fair manner?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that the big elephant?
Yes. One of the elephants. One of the elephants.
From my perspective, that's the biggest elephant.
I think it's the biggest one.
Uh-huh.
So my question is, do you want to continue talking about marking, or do we want to address this?
Address it and get it behind.
All right.
On that note,
you sit down for at least 30 seconds. As we now know, is that we have a lot of leased bottom that does not have cages on it, and I think many of your concerns are that there could be cages plopped down there tomorrow, and that the Lynn Haven River could have cages everywhere. And so then we're back to that. And so yes, we're talking about bottom that's already leased, but does not have cages on it yet. How can we come up, and do we want, I know you want, we want to come up with some type of process where people are notified and have the chance to comment and object to cages on a new cages on a new on, not a new lease, an already lease, a lease that has not had cages on it before. And we're back to the same thing we started discussing at the very end of the last time of right now permits are not required for these new cages. But that would be a process that you could go through. You could you, we could decide, well, we want to permit them. Then you've got all kind of issues with that. Are you permitting each individual cage? Are you permitting an area? That kind of thing. And I expect, y'all can interrupt me at any time, I expect industry would probably find that very objectionable.
But you actually have a process on the books.
We could call, require permitting. Yes, we could.
A fisheries permit. Is that what we're talking about?
We could require, right now, the 12 inches and below, the VMRC right. has
By regulation,
mm-hmm. said that they do not have to have permits, 12 inches and below. And so that certainly could be changed. And it can be, and requiring a notification process. And again, I think that's going to cause some grief. I think anything you do is going to cause some grief. I do think there's another method of going, and as part of it, you keep hearing this use plan type of thing, where how the lease is said to be used is the way it has to be used, meaning that you just can't plop cages on a lease unless that is in that use plan. And if there were leases out there that do not have cages on them already, they would have to go through a notification process if they want to put leases.
Yeah,
I'll speak. They want to put cages.
They want to put cages on that lease. And as to whoever was, oh, it was Mike. Leases already have cages on them would be already, you know, that would become their use plan for those areas. I expect it's not going to have as much objection that route. I think the homeowners want to be able to have a comment on cages before they're put on there. Any comments? Yes, Richard.
The use plan and the permitting process be a lot of more work for a lot more VMRC people. That's fine. I mean, I'd still go back to the safety of the cages. Will they go through a use permit? Whatever, the safety of the cages. And I would recommend us considering something to the effect, change it however you want. The people that have current leases and don't have any cages, let them put cages without permits, but make them be in 4 or 5 feet of water and marked like we said. That way, number one, the homeowners wouldn't see them at low tide. 99% of the boat problems hitting them will be eliminated. If they want to put them in shallow water because it's by their right thing to do that, let them go through the permitting process. But I dare say they don't want to deal with the homeowners. They go in there and they put them in 4 or 5 feet of water, and it's going to be harder for them to pull them up, but it's going to eliminate the vast majority of potential for boat and water skier strikes.
Kim, Mike, Hap, you got comments on that?
Just comments about placement in shallow water. A lot of times the people put them in shallow water because they don't have the equipment to deal with a heavy cage, and they can work it at low tide.
It's a lot easier to work, but we're talking about the busiest waterway in the state of Virginia, and we're talking about people's life and limb and property. And I wouldn't have this asterisk requirement over there on the eastern shore where it's very sparsely populated, but this is the most populated waterway in Virginia Beach. Are we going to endanger people or aren't we?
Well, Richard, there hasn't been anybody hurt by an oyster cage. There's never been a collision, to my knowledge, and that's what the police sergeant said last time.
That doesn't mean anything.
Well, let me finish.
Okay.
When our cages are in shallow water, that water... anybody that's tubing in that area should be arrested for child endangerment or whatever. A kid falls in 2 feet of water or a foot of water going 50 miles an hour, go break his neck or break his head. Everybody I see that's got any sense is out in the center of the area. You've got 10 feet of water, 5 feet of water, you know, so if the kid flips off of the thing, he's got plenty of soft water to land on, not 2 feet of water or less. So I don't see that that's a big problem, but, you know, if this is what the group comes up with, we'll figure out.
The problem I see there is the tide. I mean, your cages can be underwater by a foot or two.
Right.
And then 6 hours later, they're in the water by an inch. And therein lies the variance that causes the thing to be 1 minute it's safe and 1 minute it's not safe. And that's part of what Richard's saying is if you're trying to have a minimum water level, I mean, you know, what's that, from mean low water? I mean, how's that going to help me when we get a big southwest wind? I mean, you know, it's going to blow the water out of here anyway. Now, you know, we haven't talked about setbacks. What do you guys think about setbacks?
Well, let's start off with zero, but then you give me your number and we can start working.
Well, you know, I know Ben doesn't like this word, but I have to use the word zoning because I'm a developer of land, and the zoning department, you know, has a lot of rules about conflicts of zoning right next to each other. You can't have commercial and residential right next door to each other. I mean, you know your work barges are right up on somebody's backyard. Yeah. And I know that, you know, setbacks are usually one of the things that is used in the zoning permit and in the city. Somebody used the word buffer. You know, I like this idea of buffering around like the sacrificial reefs. I think it's a very important thing. Buffering away from somebody's residential land. If you're going to have a commercial and a residential next to each other in the city, you got to have 20 feet or more.
I would say that I like Millie's idea where everybody gets their riparian rights. That puts you about between 100 and 200 feet off of your shoreline. Anybody that's got a dock, a boat isn't supposed to be within 50 feet of that dock going any faster than the no wake speed. So you're not talking about, and I already lost my last train of thought, but it was a fact.
Happens to me all the time. I know it was good, but I don't remember what it was.
Is everyone in agreement?
I second that one.
I agree with that. 100 feet, 200 feet doesn't make a difference to me. I don't want to call it repairing. I just like to call it a buffer. That, with the late young lady you said to take your place that time. All she's doing, she wants to reduce conflict. She didn't want to side with the homeowner. She didn't want to side with the waterman. She wanted to reduce conflict. I can't tell you whether it'd be 50 feet, 100 feet, 200 feet. You know, maybe if it was 200 feet, it would get rid of those people that got between you and the landowners.
You can just. I think I am about that.
If we hey, put Richard, in a buffer zone, that would solve 90% of all of this issue.
First, you got to use an odd number because they only use odd numbers in the code. So 210 seems to be the right number.
That's correct. 205. But also, if we're
going to
do.
No, it can extend out 210.
One other recommendation I'd like to make is the sanctuary reefs ought to have a 25-foot buffer around them because we do have a problem with poaching and what have you, and that would be a nice buffer for those things. Is that good enough for you?
That's a minimum, I think, but yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, what did you tell me?
Sanctuary.
Yeah,
I said
25.
I'm
going to
put you on the end.
I mean, the problem is 25 feet is not even the length of your boat. You know, the front end of your boat could be, you know, in the poached area.
I'll let
peering over the back of you.
Karen,
what do you think? 25, I don't think is enough. What would you estimate?
I would probably say 50 feet, but
how many?
It would 25.
How much?
50 feet around a sanctuary reef. We have had serious problems with poaching of oysters from sanctuary reefs, even though they are marked as sanctuary areas and say no harvesting. We've had serious problems with poaching.
All right.
Let's re-clarify. We're still speaking of cages.
Oh. I thought I avoided that.
Correct. Cages?
Yes.
So cages, no cages being set within X number of feet of sanctuary reefs. Mm-hmm. And your 50 feet is a number you would like. I guess I've got the cage setback off of mean low water in residential areas of what?
210, we talked about that.
You didn't say right.
What?
That's pretty.
You didn't say right.
You want to buffer off mean low water?
No, she wasn't talking about putting cages in their sanctuary reefs.
The question that was raised of me was just where, how close any.
Sanctuary reefs are out in the middle where there's no.
Some of them are shoreline. They're different kinds. Some are intertidal.
Buffer zone where it's like no man's land.
Right.
You can't do any activity.
So now you're talking about no leases.
Yeah, that was the question that was asked of me, and so I was just answering the question that was asked. It's not, it doesn't apply specifically to cages.
Yeah. But I think it's 50.
Yeah, I guess that buffer for the sanctuary is to keep leases, new leases, from coming close to them, because then a guy can kind of get lost a little bit.
Right, eases over.
Find a couple bushels.
Do we already have a buffer around reefs?
We don't have a specific policy of buffering them, but we have some pending applications in the Lynn Haven, and we've told the applicant that we are where there are some reefs, and we are going to buffer them.
Good. How much?
50 feet.
Jim, did we have a recommendation?
We have a regulation in place right now that you're not allowed to have any harvest gear within 100 feet of any marked reef. That's already in place. You could have your lease there, but you can't be harvested right next to it. And that, you know, today we're buffering things more than we used to, but still, if law enforcement saw somebody within 100 feet of a reef, that they would be in violation. So if they were doing harvesting. But the boundaries lots of times are closer than that because the reefs are old and they were put in before we thought through these things. So,
now, is there a buffer between leases?
No.
So how do I know if I've crossed over the line in somebody else's lease?
It's your responsibility. You have to know where you are. I mean, we have a nice little app for your phone that could show you exactly where you are on your lease at any time.
Oh, that's nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Most leases are contiguous to each other, and that's the reason we require them to be marked. So you and your neighbor know whether you're on the right side of the line or not.
Ben, while you're up there, are there any restrictions to working hours and working days of the week and stuff like that associated with working these oyster grounds?
Yes.
And what are they?
Sunrise to sunset. You can't work on Sundays. Well, you can do some husbandry activity on weekends if you have a husbandry permit. In other words, you check your gear, but you can't harvest. But typically, just regular leases, if you're using them traditionally or with cages, it's sunrise to sunset.
7 days a week. If you're not harvesting,
days a week. Can't on Sunday.
You can't on Sunday.
Not on Sunday.
Not harvest.
Cannot harvest. But you can work your cages and move them around and stuff like that on Sundays.
Yes, you should.
You can do anything.
No, you can, for a dredge or by hand or something like that, it's Monday through Saturday. But you can do, there's a code section that aquaculture is allowed to harvest on Sunday.
Okay, that was incorrect.
And that's a code section, so that's not, we couldn't change that by regulation in a second. Okay.
And if you're harvesting, the health department says you have to be off of the water by 10 a.m.
In the summer months.
There's a regulation about when you can work during warm weather months, and it's different times. As the summer gets hotter, you have to be back to the dock by a certain time, unless you have refrigeration on board of your boat.
For harvesting, though.
Yes.
For harvesting, right.
So in summer months, most of the watermen are in early.
Right.
They have to be. Most of them don't have refrigeration.
Before 10 a.m.
Our boats are never out on weekends or holidays because of the boating traffic, the boating public out there. He just can't do any work, the waves and the action and everything like that. And it's just a hassle, so we just don't do it. Now,
a
smaller operation that's working by hand in a little cove or something like that, they might be out there. I don't know.
Well, that's, I'm kind of getting back to that.
You know, I guess I'm the largest operation. I've got the boats that everybody takes pictures of. We just don't go out.
I'm waiting for that.
Holidays.
Okay.
All right. We've got a buffer around the sanctuary reefs. We were starting to talk about a setback or a buffer, or I don't care what you call it, and I guess it would have to be off mean low water, in residential areas of cages. And Hap started this. But we never, I mean, y'all are starting to throw some numbers around, and that's what I want to know. What number do you think is a good number?
I would really think like 100 feet or 100, no more than 150 feet. The maximum that the law requires right now is 210 feet, but that's based on a half acre. If you've got more wider water frontage, it comes in. So you don't have too many of those properties, you know, going out 210 feet. I would think that 150 feet would be acceptable.
Sure.
I'm going right down the line. Millie, you got a number?
210.
All right, Richard, you got a number?
Since Hap's living with it, 150.
All right, this John?
Nope.
Oh, sorry. I skipped.
You just got 150 seems reasonable.
We need to talk more. Louder. Now, John.
I'm
200.
150,
150, 200.
I'm keeping school.
I would support 150 feet offshore.
Hey, I'm keeping
off mean low water. Okay, we're talking from mean low water.
Yeah, off mean low water. And I'm really talking about in residential areas, which mm-hmm. I guess is what we're all talking about. All right, Kim.
150.
All right, Mike.
I would shorten it to 100.
Okay, and
I like
other John.
210.
210. So everyone's between 100 and 210, with 150 being our median. Is that right? It's our median, not our mean.
This is the obvious, but no matter what we pick, it's going to be too little for some and too much for others. Mm-hmm. It's amazing we're as close as we were.
But that's not the point. The point is we need to make a decision and so we accomplish something.
Right.
Accomplish something? Are you kidding?
And that would be it. That's a code change, right? Or is that a regulation change?
Regulation change.
All right, I need to ask a question. Ben, I want you to tell me what we just decided. if we're saying a setback or a buffer zone of 150 feet, how can you best apply that? Is that from shoreline, from property line, from mean low water? How do you want to say it?
So let me back up just a second. I'll answer that in a second. So what y'all are talking about is creating a buffer where cages wouldn't be placed, right?
That's
even right. If there was a lease all the way up to the shoreline,
right.
Already there.
Right. Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that could be done by regulation. That's not a code thing.
Could we go back down the line and make sure everybody understands that we're talking about? Are we talking about cages or just oysters?
Cages in the lake.
This whole issue is cages.
Cages.
Okay, I agree. You're right. Second one.
Okay. So your question was.
Your point of measurement, which is...
Point of measurement, mean low water would be the logical choice because you as a property owner own down the mean low water and channel water, mean low water, the state owns. So that is a definable line while it fluctuates from day to day. But generally speaking, you know, you own down the mean low water. So any other line, mean high water, is up on your property. So for us to enforce that some kind of way, we would have to trespass onto your property and take a tape out and measure 150 feet from high water. So mean low water, we never lease above mean low water because we can't. The state only owns the bottom for mean low water channelwood. So it seems to me that's how we measure a riparian. 210 feet is the max you can go out with a riparian lease from mean low water.
All
Just a quick question of would this have to be a new regulation, or is there an existing regulation that you would modify? I'm trying to think of them, and
I think it would have to be
a new regulation.
Well, we could modify the aquaculture regulation, I would assume, that allows cages on lease. And this would be another requirement, whether it's New Haven specific or whether it's statewide.
It would be specific.
That was the next question.
That was my
commissioner.
I think it would have to be specific. Yes.
Nuances and landmarks. When you say residential property, mm-hmm. what do you mean? Do you mean a property that has a home on it? Do you mean a property that's zoned residential? Or do you mean in the entire river system here that it's predominantly residential? Because as this stands now, there would be no cages with 150 feet of mean low water off of First Landing State Park, which clearly is not residential. So I ask this not to be annoying, but to kind of show these are the nuances that we've wrestled with all these issues for years, and it's why it's not always that easy. So
can we just say all?
Can if you want.
Residential.
My intention when I was first thinking it was residential areas off your homes, mm-hmm. off your where people live, some off a marsh somewhere. It came
from the original homeowners riparian special lease, and we're just getting off of that and all that, and we're just going to a buffer.
We'll get back to that eventually, but yeah, this is a point. So I would, you know, that was just as a buffer off of
residential property,
residential areas.
But I agree with that.
That clear enough?
And this is an aquaculture buffer. That's really what this is, right?
It's a cage buffer.
It's only cage.
It's only cages.
What's the difference now?
You could shell the bottom.
Well, okay.